Station number 14978, Charles Turnbull, rail 24.
Mr. Turnbull, Reel 24. You were talking about relationships between Russians and British troops, Mr. Turnbull.
Right, I can always remember this occasion when this order came down to the companies that really a team would be selected to play against the British forces occupying Berlin. Well, this challenge was accepted in good faith. And the best players who were available, that we still had a number of footballers who had played for division clubs in England pre-war. So, taken as read, the team was selected from actual British troops in Berlin itself, in the sector. But when the day came for the match to be played on the Olympic Stadium, and of course it was a big day that all the British troops, the Russian troops, the Americans occupied the Olympic Stadium for this match, which was billed quite heavily. What the Russians had done, instead of choosing the team from the occupying Russian troops, as the British had done, a special team was flown in from Russia, which was the equivalent to the Russian Dynamos. And when they turned out in all the regalia and all the know-how, not a team of 11 players, there was about 18 paraded on the ground. The Russian flags, etc., were flying, and they treated the game as a game of national importance, which was not the spirit that the challenge had been given. So the feeling existed like, really, one could say, the Russians first entering into Berlin, Russia still wanted to assume the position, even on a sporting level, of primary importance.
What happened?
The Russians were victorious. Naturally, if one could say naturally, that the game wasn't of a level nature. This team that came had been specially prepared for the match, where our team had been doing normal duties, etc.
Were you there at the game?
I wasn't chosen to play, but I was there at the match. And one soon found out that this team, as I've previously said, it was obvious that they had prepared for this game at a national level, which there again, it really, and still to this day, sees how foreign countries are still playing up how important sporting fixtures are to, should we say, national enthusiasm and national importance, where it's regarded as a very important thing.
What was the score?
Can't remember the exact score. It wasn't a great defeat.
Probably
about 4-0 or something like that.
You were meeting Russian troops, you say, in nightclubs and things going on in the city centre. Did this lead to any trouble when they...
No trouble, but one tended to, in a way, never got to them closely. One tended to, whilst being reasonably pleasant, that one didn't become friendly with them. I think one remembered what they had done in their initial entry into Berlin, which the British soldier wouldn't have done, and also seeing, should we say, could we say, an animal instinct that seemed to be prevalent with the ordinary British soldier.
Russian soldier.
And really, the Russian soldier. And also the type of commander that they must have had, which was different to the British type of commander.
What about the Americans? Did you come into contact with them?
Didn't at that time have a great deal to do with the Americans. Don't know why. Probably we must have been more nearer the Russian element at that time where we were than what we were with the Americans.
Berlin, you say, was devastated. What was your role in the city? What were you doing, your battalion, your company?
More or less doing what I've said. We were the occupying force in that sector. And it was a case of maintaining discipline within the population. Just saying that nothing unruly occurred. Can't remember any specific objects being given, apart from what I said, doing these localised patrols at night time and getting the companies within the battalion up to scratch again and seeing that everybody was turned out well.
Were you involved in taking German civilians after curfew?
No. The only time that I ever had to apprehend anybody was the Russian soldier that I'm telling you about. The curfew was observed by the by the German civilian. And really, they were in the process of rebuilding. And I would say that really, it was amazing what they did accomplish, literally building again with the bare hands. And in the period that we were there, they did accomplish quite a lot. That they were commencing to try and re-establish themselves. And one had to remember the attitude was still there. That the German didn't regard itself, I would say, as a defeated nation. The element of thinking was still there that in the end, the German nation would re-emerge and still get back to probably be a leading figure in world affairs again. That they, in a way, at the beginning, probably feel a little downtrodden, but that element was still there, that the German did still regard himself as the premier nation, if I could say that. Probably, in my opinion, the British nation and the German nation were probably a similar in the line of thought.
Were the claiming not to be Nazis, never having been Nazis, etc., and they were led by a group?
Well, that feeling was still there. That really, should we say that Nazism had done a lot for the German nation. That really, I think the uplift from the 1930s up to, should we say 1939, and what they had accomplished by, should we say, the ride that they'd had right throughout Europe when they'd been victorious, and also the living standards of the German population had been improved considerably. And I think they had had been appreciated. And I think really, in a way, the German nation had never forgotten the defeat of the World War One, and probably they felt as though, right, they were back to and occupying the position that they should occupy in history.
When the story of the concentration camps broke, do you recall the effect that that was having on yourselves and the German population? Because that did break quite quickly after the war, didn't it?
The period that we were in Berlin, I can't remember any impact about that. I think really, I don't know whether I'm right in saying so, I think that impact came probably a little bit later.
Were you involved in tracing known Nazis in the city?
No, not directly involved with that.
The black market would be pretty rife. Was that? Did that have any effects? Did you see that in action?
Well, it was starting to flourish, especially when the ordinary nightlife and that sort of thing start to re-emerge. But it was a long time, mind, before, should we say, that the living conditions start to improve and the food situation. It's quite a while before it started to get back onto any sort of a level keel.
Desperate people, desperate remedies. What about prostitution?
Well, that was prevalent, that. I mean, they did, in the city centre, they did have the red light district.
Was that a problem to you as soldiers? We are having an increase in VD, for example, amongst the men.
Well, myself, not being that type of a person, I would say that really I tended to disregard that.
But the men themselves, were you finding that you were having disciplinary problems with prostitution and VD?
I can't remember having a direct problem with it myself. But it definitely was the red light area, where if one wanted it, it was there in front of you. And as I previously said, if one had anything at all to give, that sort of thing could be obtained without any difficulty. There again, let's face it, the German female, she was willing to collaborate with the British soldier. If conditions were going to become better for her, there was that feeling that it was there if you were looking for it.
We're meant
and
to
one could remember that really, let's face it, the British soldier by now, he was suffering from lack of female company. And one had to understand that one can't disregard human nature. And unless one was that type of a person where his thoughts were his people remained in England, if he was probably a married man, he tended to attempt to disregard that and look forward to the day when he would be able to resume his civilian life. And I think that really, the real thinking person, he attempted to think about the bigger picture and not tend for anything to happen which he would probably regret in the future. And I think this of the person who had had the right background at home, that was the way that he tended to think.
Were serious relationships taken up between troops and German women?
It did happen. But how it ended, I'm not in a position to actually quote anything in particular. But serious relationship did develop. One soon found out when a certain person in the company or certain individuals would be making their way to a certain spot in their off-duty times, in a way did have access to German homes, where probably a German woman who hadn't been attached to a German individual, or probably a German lady who had been widowed, would assume a relationship with a German soldier, because a British soldier, because let's face it, well, as we've said previously, they had something to give which would make better conditions for them. And I would say the German female tended to offer an attraction which was taken up by some people.
Were there any dangers to British troops on the streets at night? I'm thinking in terms of moving around, not in groups, but were there any gangs or situations where they could be assaulted?
Nothing like that, where we were, happened. One tended to go about quite freely and not feel in any danger. I mean, if anything hard, nothing broke out whereby you had to take direct action. Not where we were. That really things were, if one could say, quite harmonious.
You've mentioned the ceremonial guard when there were visitors to the zone, not to the city. Were there any other parades? Did you have a victory parade? Were you involved in that in Berlin?
Can't remember having a victory parade. Doesn't live in mind.
Have you any other memories of Berlin that we haven't covered?
I would say that really what I've said was the main things. It was, could we say, quite a proud moment to enter Berlin and think that one was part of the occupying force. That really, there we were, in the heart of Germany, mixing amongst Germany, seeing really the devastation that was there, that had been inflicted by the British Air Force and what the German had had to suffer. It was really very severe. In my opinion, nothing like it had happened in England. Not as bad as what had happened there in either Hamburg or Berlin.
Was the initial reaction to be sorry for them or that they deserved it?
I would say, could one say, an in-between feeling. To think, really, the human race had had to suffer such, but when one looks back and find out really what the German nation had inflicted in the places that they had occupied, I would say that really, after what, when one learned the full picture, one could not feel in a way sorry for what had been done. What the British authorities had done were, the German nation had to be brought to its knees. And whatever way one could accomplish that, well, it was a situation that it had to be complied with face on, and if this had to be done, well, the bombing, etc., to bring the German nation to an age, it was a thing that had to be done and could not be regretted. It was war.
You were now in a peacetime situation, in a sense, obviously looking to being, to going home. Mm-hmm. How was this beginning to affect you and the men around you as time went on? There wasn't any sign that you were going home.
Well, there were signs that we were going to go home, because material was starting to come into the company office. Because remember now, we were more or less in a peacetime situation. And I was more or less still directly involved with this, because one piece of information that came in war, the authorities were starting to think on how members of the force would re-establish themselves in civilian life. And one letter that came into the company office was saying, and it had been sponsored by the firm of Cadbury's, the Cadbury brothers, who were a Quaker organisation, and they had sent this invitation to any member of the British forces who wished to attempt to re-establish himself in civilian life, that if he wished to, and he had any idea, if he would like to become probably a self-employed person, if he made application and stated what he'd done in his pre-war life and what he'd done of an educational nature, if he wished to, he could apply after he'd been demobilised. He could apply for a course at Cadbury's, that they were establishing a college there in their grounds, which would help to re-establish that person in civilian life and re-equip him for anything that he may wish to do. He may have ideas about establishing some form of a business, or he may have been a commercial traveller, or something of that nature. And if he wished to apply, he could attend this course, which would take the form of, probably, after all the years that the person had been away, probably doing a course of ordinary English, arithmetic, bookkeeping, on how to re-establish himself with the civilian population again. Because one had to remember, a dissociation for quite a large number of years, he'd been used to mixing amongst men only, and I thought at that time that that was really a great idea, that things like this were becoming to come through, which meant that even people in England were starting to think about the problem that the British forces who were left were going to have to re-establish themselves in a civilian nature. Anyhow, I thought this was a good idea, and I filled in the application form, and I was pleased to learn that after a period of time, that when I was able to get back to England, that I would be accepted as a student. And I was pleased to receive this news, that I thought, well, here we go again, here's a chance to get back to a form of civilian life.
Were there other companies sending this kind of information through?
Well, that was the only one that I had direct contact with, because it was a thing that I was interested in, that I had really the idea with my background training that this was a thing that I would be probably if one could say, an ideal person to attend this sort of thing, that I had this in mind, that this would be an outlet for me when I was able to get back home.
Was it a matter of concern with a lot of the ministers what they would be doing when they got back, or some of them wouldn't have jobs to go back to?
Well, that's quite right. One knew that if one had a job before he'd been called up, it was a well-known fact that really that firm were committed to giving that person back his employment and the attempt to re-establish himself. But the worst people who had been called up, they did not have a job. Because even in those days, let's face it, we talk about conditions in this present time when employment is a difficult thing. But it was also of a difficult nature even in those days, that there was a large number of unemployed people, and those unemployed people had been called up. Therefore, they were going to probably have to approach that situation again. And that thought was prevalent on how would he re-establish himself after that period away, which was a situation which was quite a difficult thing. He would be glad to get back home, but really after a few weeks had elapsed, that was a problem he was going to have to face.
Did you get involved with the election that came after, shortly after the war? Were you still in the army in Germany when the election in Britain came round?
I was out of it. I was out of it.
So you were, as I say, you were obviously thinking now of getting home. What was happening around you to show that this was beginning to take place, other than the course and that kind of thing that you've mentioned?
Well, I can't remember exactly what really happened, but there came a period when we left Berlin. Because I can always remember the order being given, and the actual place that we went to, it doesn't live in my mind. But I can always remember Blackett saying, right, we've got to go to such and such a place. And you remember me saying that he had established this riding school, and his instructions were that we would be taking the horses with us. And his orders were that I would be in charge of transporting the company back to this place, and he would bring the horses on. That this riding business, after the men being instructed to ride in a correct fashion, that they did look upon this as a real pleasure, something out of the ordinary and something that hadn't taken place before. So I still thought, well, this is a good thing, that it's a good thing for the men. Anyhow, we went to this place, and I can't place it vividly in my mind, but it was a camp whereby there was Polish internees, and we were given the task of looking after them. And also, there was Germans around as well, and one that I became quite friendly with, he was a German dentist. And getting on a little in years, and he'd been a German dentist pre-war, and part of his task were that anything of a dental nature that occurred, he had the task of looking after them, whether it was anyone from the British forces or any of these Polish internees, etc. And I can always remember him saying to me that really I had had dental treatment whilst I'd been in the forces, pre-war to going abroad. And he always said to me, you come to me and I will fix your teeth up to the way that they should be. And the treatment was absolutely first class. Because after leaving the forces, I never had to have any dental treatment at all for a very large number of years, even up till about 10 years ago. And I'm still in the position now, at the age of 77, that I've still got my own teeth.